Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthier weight and get on with your life. That is what it's all about. How amazing to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you'd like to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what's on your mind, what's weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, or any kind of compulsive eating is not food. The real problem is what's eating at you. So last week, I had a question from Jolie. She wrote, why do we as a society feel sorry for heroin addicts or people who have anorexia or are alcoholic? But when it comes to people who are overweight, there's so much discrimination and disgust. I feel like people with addictions get pity, whereas when I go to a grocery store, people judge me and look at me like I'm doing something wrong. Why is this? So last week, I talked a little bit about the misperceptions that our society has of people who are of size. And this is such an important topic, I wanted to keep exploring it. This kind of weight shaming is so pervasive. We all need to be aware of it so that we can take steps to create change. And that includes, and actually at the top of the list, that means not shaming yourself, not weight shaming yourself, not body shaming yourself, not doing any kind of self-shaming. Because when you are shaming yourself and you feel shame and you feel bad about yourself, then of course you are more vulnerable to using food to escape your own mean voice. So that's why your relationship to yourself is so critical. So in an article last year called Discrimination Against Fat People is So Endemic, Most of Us Don't Even Realize It's Happening, and she uses the F word sort of purposefully. I don't particularly like using the F word, fat. But in this article, the author, Angela Meadows, says that when we think of prejudice and discrimination, most of us tend to think of overt attacks, harassment, or discriminatory behavior. Blatant examples of prejudice do still happen, but discrimination is subtle or apparently inconsequential. These are known as microaggressions. And Angela Meadows is a weight stigma researcher, and she focuses on how these microaggressions impact people who are overweight. Here are some examples she gives. When they get on a bus and the person sitting next to an empty seat scowls at them or pointedly places their bag on the seat. I would say, you know, less likely a bus, more likely like an airplane or something. Many of my patients and clients have told me that they dread getting on an airplane and they see the faces of the people that they're sitting next to, and it's just so humiliating. People watching them while they're eating in a restaurant or checking out the contents of their grocery cart in a supermarket. Other microaggressions are fat jokes on TV or media, or a thin friend asking if she looks fat in this. Hearing a group of children making fun of them. Even wondering whether they will be taken seriously when they go to the doctor with a sprained ankle or just be told to go away and lose some weight. While that may sound ridiculous, like if you go to the doctor and say, I sprained my ankle, why would the doctor say, well, you should lose some weight? Well, you know, you who are listening may have experienced this kind of thing where you go to the doctor for my shoulder hurts and they basically blame it on your weight, which is so annoying. So that people are not taken seriously and everything is blamed on weight. Tony is saying that's why she hasn't flown in several years. Yeah, Tony, I mean, I hear you. It's a humiliating and horrible thing. I would not say that it is a microaggression. I would actually call that an overt aggression. And it's so painful and so awful. And we have to be more aware of it so that we can take steps to change the way other people respond to people and change the way we think about and respond to ourselves. Angela Meadows says, while any individual incident may be relatively minor, it is the totality of stigma that defines our existence. She says, this is a constant source of physical and psychological stress. And by the way, I have to point out that when we're stressed, so our bodies produce stress hormones. They make changes to our cardiovascular, immune, neurological systems to deal with that stress. And chronic stress is associated with increased rates of diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, and more. It's also associated with weight gain. This is what I talk about in my book, in the chapter on why, you know, you should ditch dieting. Basically, researchers have found that the experience of dieting is stressful, and the experience of dieting alone, just being on a diet, whether you know it or not, that's the crazy part in this one study. Some people did not know they were on a diet. Even the experience of dieting can cause changes in your body that leads to weight gain. So remember, dieting causes weight gain. Stress causes weight gain. Even if there aren't consistently stigmatizing, upsetting incidents, just worrying about it happening, just knowing you're going to get on a plane, Tony, if you're still watching, you know, maybe you're not making plans because just the mere thought of getting on that plane is so anxiety producing that it causes stress and all the resulting impact of that stress. So worrying about something happening, the anticipatory anxiety is extremely stressful. It takes an enormous amount of mental and emotional energy. Anxiety, of course, is a form of stress. So microaggressions against people of size who are not what does that even mean, people of size, as if there's, you know, we all have a size. Well, people who are perceived as being over a certain size that we as a society have decided that they should be, I mean, which is very much a construct. If we go back to the age of Rubens, you know, those women were considered the height of sexiness. So it's all a cultural construct, people. But right now we have a construct that says this is what is quote unquote normal. And if you're above that, then, you know, there's something wrong with you. This is the cultural idea and it is wrong. But it is so normalized in our society that many people don't recognize these micro and macro aggressions as stigmatizing at all. Some people actually believe they deserve this kind of attitude or behavior, or that the perpetrator of the aggression was just stating a fact. For example, if someone says, oh, well, you know, fat people are disgusting. If you yourself think that that's true, then you're not even going to perceive it as egregious as it is. So this points to the importance of your relationship with yourself as the primary way of influencing your self-esteem and your relationships. If you think you are ugly and disgusting and someone else says so, that person's going to sound like he or she knows you really well. It may not even register as inappropriate or abusive. So back to the research. She found that if people do challenge the stigma, they may be told to ignore it. Their experiences are invalidated. They might be told they're just, you know, imagining it, that they're overly sensitive, even paranoid, or they need to develop a sense of humor. They may even be told they need to lose weight if they don't like it. Isn't that something? Nice, huh? I mean, most people would never tell a member of another stigmatized group that they should change themselves if they don't want to be discriminated against. Can you imagine? Oh, I'm sorry you're being discriminated against because you're a woman. You should just become a man. I'm sorry you're being targeted because of the color of your skin. You should just get a different skin color. Oh, you're being discriminated because you're gay? Well, stop that. Just stop being gay. People won't hate on you. I mean, really? What? You'd never say that. It's ludicrous. And yet people have actually been told, well, if you don't like, you know, if you don't like being targeted, if you don't like these comments, then do something about it. Lose weight. So most of us like to think of ourselves, I think most of us like to think of ourselves as unprejudiced. We would never harass an overweight person on the street. We would never side-eye them as they come to sit next to us in a airplane seat, or I'd like to think that, or beat them up or give them bad service. But so many people are delivering these microaggressions without realizing it. I've heard so many of my patients, for whatever their weight is, you know, from slightly overweight to extremely overweight, they have told me that they have had the experience of a friend saying to them, a skinny mini friend saying, oh, do I look fat? Or, oh, I'm so fat in this. Or, oh, I've gained 5 pounds. And even that is painful and awful. And it's saying, hey, there's something wrong with being overweight. And they're saying it to a person who's overweight without any understanding or empathy or recognition that what they are saying is hurtful. So we all have to watch our language and attitudes towards others and towards ourselves. Again, the relationship to ourselves is crucial. And this is something that I discuss in detail in my book. The third chapter is called Make Peace with Food and Yourself. And I am going to share a little bit of it with you. By the way, lots of you have asked me about the audio version of the book, which is coming. Just heard from Audible. There's just a couple of things we need to fix in the editing. But other than that, you know, we should be good to go. And hopefully it will be available at the beginning of the year. I will let you guys know, because a lot of people read books by listening to them. So I want to share a little bit about this chapter, Making Peace with Yourself. One of the most important things that you can do is turn your inner critic into a friend. So by the way, when you're saying things like, oh, I'm so disgusting, or I can't believe that, or, you know, when you're saying, I have no willpower, I have no control, I'm gross. These are just some of the things I've heard like in this week. I'm never going to get better. There's something wrong with me. Well, that is being critical. That is not being kind. You need to turn your inner critic into a friend. And this is a crucial step that really helped my client, who I'm going to call Emily. So when Emily came to see me, she had gained and lost 20 pounds more times than she could count. She calculated that she had gained and lost at least 200 pounds in total since she went on her first diet at age 10, and she joked that she always found those lost pounds. So in other areas of her life, Emily was doing pretty well. Worked as a literary agent, lived in the Hollywood Hills, had a group of really great friends. Like, from the outside, everything about Emily's life looked great. And she was successful in every area except one, and that was her weight. And one day, she started the session by announcing that she was feeling really bad about her body. And a few nights earlier, she had been at a party having a great time. Suddenly, she was drawn to the dessert table, which was full of cake and cookies and brownies, and she felt like some invisible force was pulling her towards sugar. And she compared it. You guys know I'm a huge Star Wars fan/geek. My daughters say that I'm a Star Wars geek. I say that I'm a Star Wars super fan. But so you're going to love her analogy that she made. She said it was like the scene in the original Star Wars when the Death Star pulls in the Millennium Falcon. And for those of you who don't know Star Wars, which I can't believe there are people out there who don't know Star Wars, the Death Star in the first Star Wars had this crazy gravitational force that pulls spacecraft into it, and they cannot do anything to resist. Resistance is futile. And that is how Emily felt about brownies. The dessert table was the Death Star, and she was helpless against it. So she started eating brownies and then cake, and she could not stop. And she got really embarrassed and self-conscious, and she was thinking that people were watching her, but she still couldn't stop. So she snuck a few brownies into a napkin and hid them in her pocket of her cardigan she was wearing. And she went into the bathroom to eat the brownies in private. And she stood at the bathroom sink, stuffing brownies into her mouth, crying, and barely even tasting anything. So what kind of a mood do you think Emily was in, given that she was eating brownies and cake? For those of you who are aware of the food mood formula, then you probably know she was feeling empty and lonely. If filling bulky foods that take up space in your stomach are your go-tos, then that is correlated with filling a void, some kind of empty space. So if you're thinking emptiness and loneliness, yes, you are right. You're absolutely right. Emily said it was horrible. It was horrible. Afterwards, and this is Emily talking, she says, afterwards, I told myself, you're so disgusting. You have no willpower. You're completely out of control and gross. So I asked Emily what was going on right before she was pulled toward the dessert table. And she'd been having a pretty good time until her ex-boyfriend, Henry, showed up with his new girlfriend, who was very thin. However, Emily did not seem fazed by this at all. She said, oh, it's okay. What happened with Henry? That's ancient history. We're all good now. We're good. And then she said, oh, I feel so gross and disgusting. I hate my body. So feeling bad about her body was Emily's way of expressing and distracting from other bad feelings. Seeing her ex with someone new was painful, even though she tried to convince herself that she was fine, she's fine, all good with that breakup. She felt empty and disconnected when it came to relationships, especially with guys. So filling up on desserts was a way of filling the emptiness inside. By eating until she was stuffed and in physical pain, she converted her emotional pain to physical pain. So what Emily needed was a different way to respond to herself when she was upset. She had to learn to speak differently to and about herself. She didn't realize, and here's the thing, she didn't realize how mean and dismissive she was. And I explain that thoughts and beliefs lead to feelings, which in turn lead to behaviors. So by speaking to herself in a super harsh way, she felt bad, very bad. And then she used brownies for comfort and distraction. She said, I'm so used to doing what I do, I don't even know that I'm doing it. So what do you do when you're so good at just going to the kitchen or the drive-thru or whatever, wherever, that you don't even know you're being triggered? You actually think you're being triggered by food. Well, one thing that you can do besides the food mood formula, you know, is to notice the way you talk to yourself. It is bad enough when someone else says hurtful things. It's even worse. Yes, worse. It's worse when you say mean things to yourself. So changing the way that you talk to yourself is extremely powerful and transformative. And there's a great quote. It's by body image expert Marcia Hutchinson. And it's this. If you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left. So to break free from binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, be sure to talk to yourself the same way that you talk to your friends. If you wouldn't say it to a friend or a loved one, don't say it to yourself. So the next time you want to dive into a gallon of ice cream or open a giant bag of chips or whatever it is, eat a hamburger, eat two, whatever it is that you are doing to alleviate a bad feeling, whenever you're comfort eating or numbing yourself, be curious. Be really curious. Instead of berating yourself and saying, what's wrong with me? You know, that's a question, but it's not actually curiosity. It is a question that really disguises an attack. So instead of attacking yourself and berating yourself, ask yourself, why do I want to eat this? What is this going to do for me? What's eating at me? What's going on with me? And then try to figure out, well, what is it that you would be thinking about or feeling if you weren't focused on food? And if that sounds like a skill that will be hard to master, Don't worry, I developed some specific strategies to help you turn that inner critic into a friend. One of them is to watch the tense with which you speak to yourself. So remember how Emily said to herself as she's scarfing down brownies, "You are so disgusting, you have no willpower, you're completely out of control and gross." So think about the way you talk to yourself. Now, maybe it's along the lines of, "You're not good enough. You're never going to lose weight. You're a complete failure. No one's ever going to love you." Sound familiar? Using the pronoun "you" when you're talking to yourself or referring to yourself means that you're using the second person tense. And that usually means that your inner critic is in charge of your thoughts. And that critic is horrible. It makes you feel bad. And you know what? You just may be eating to escape your own mean voice. So when I said to Emily, "Hey, how about saying that again from a first person perspective? Say, I am completely gross." Guess what? She couldn't do it. She couldn't do it. She said it felt really harsh. She's like, "Oh, that feels harsh." When she said, "You're completely gross," she had no problem. She was all fired up, full on hating herself. So when she said, you're really completely gross, that was easy for her. But when she tried to say, I am completely gross, the words stuck in her throat. She couldn't do it, which is good. So be aware of the tense that you speak to yourself, with which you speak to yourself. And if you're doing a lot of second person talking, change to I. And even, by the way, some people say, "Well, I don't talk to myself in a mean voice. I encourage myself. I say, you can do this." And I say, fine, but who's talking? It's much better. There's a distance there. It's much better when you say, "I can do this." When you're telling yourself, "Oh, you can do this. You've got this. You got this, girl." Well, there's a distance there because you're talking to yourself from a distant perspective. When you say, "I can do this," you feel it sort of in your body and you can feel the conviction of it much better than when you're talking to yourself from a second person stance. So, give it a try. Think of a couple of harsh phrases you say to yourself on a regular basis, or use the examples I just gave you. You know, "You're not good enough. You're never going to lose weight. You're a complete failure. Nobody's going to love you." Whatever it is that you say to yourself on a regular basis, find some space where you could be alone with your thoughts and alone where you're not going to be overheard. Because yes, I'm going to put you straight out of your comfort zone, because guess what? Change does not happen in your comfort zone. Change happens outside your comfort zone. So say each of those sentences aloud. First with the "you" critical voice, the inner critic, followed by the "I" voice. Say it again. Try to say, "I'm not good enough. I'm never going to lose weight. I'm a complete failure. No one will ever love me." You can try, repeating those statements also, talking to yourself in the mirror. Notice which is easier. Notice that, and I'm going to guess that saying it from a "you" place is a lot easier than saying it from an "I" place. And you've got to practice saying it from an "I" place and really, really believing that you want the best for yourself and not the worst. You've got to stop being so automatically critical and toxic and mean to yourself and find a new way to respond to yourself. So turn the critic into a friend by catching the "you" and also making sure that you're talking to yourself in the right tone. I have other examples of how to turn the critic into a friend that I talk about in this chapter. I might get to them in a little bit, but that's enough for now. I also got a message from Megan or Megan. I'm going to go with Megan. Megan messaged me to ask me to continue to talk about my 100 ways to make peace with food. I find them so helpful and inspirational. Oh, yay. That makes me happy. Okay, so here are a few more of them. Megan or Megan. I think this is where I left off. Take care of your body. It's where you live. Don't wait until you're thinner, stronger, or lighter to appreciate your body. Take care of your body as well as you take care of your home and your possessions. Your body is the most valuable home you have, and it needs your care instead of your condemnation. Life is too short to spend another minute at war with your body. Make peace instead. It's so funny how these are aligning up so well with what I'm talking about today. So if you want to make peace with food, if you want to win the diet war, if you want to stop combating yourself and being preoccupied with food all the time, if you want to stop obsessing about every calorie, carb, macro, or what have you, fat gram, whatever, then make peace with food in part by making peace with yourself. Appreciate your curves instead of denigrating them. Enjoy the strength of your legs instead of calling yourself thunder thighs or something like that. Feed your mind instead of hating your body. Enjoy your friends now instead of worrying about how much you weigh or what other people are thinking about you. Live your life. So often when we're in this toxic relationship with our bodies and with food, we feel as if we're existing, not living, just kind of getting through, not truly embracing all that life has to offer, not truly experiencing every day and the richness of life. Don't waste another day beating yourself up, attacking yourself, feeling bad about yourself. Enjoy your life. This is the only body you have. Make the best of it. Take care of it. This is a life you have. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. Never make someone a priority when all you are to them is an option. From my favorite poet, Maya Angelou. Oh, this is a good one. Never make someone a priority when all you are to them is an option. Which, by the way, when you prioritize yourself, you're not going to be with someone who's going to make you not a priority. You're not going to tolerate that. No, you're not. The right person will always make time for you. Period. End of story. No excuses. The right person will make time for you. One of the greatest gifts you can give is your undivided attention. That's from Oprah Winfrey. The other night, and I was watching a movie with my younger daughter. I say in this, this is a few years old because then she was 8 and she just turned 12. So I was watching a movie with my younger daughter while simultaneously checking email and writing a blog post. She said, "Mom, you're not really with me." And she was right. Whew, that moment just still kind of gets to me. Yeah, she was right. I wasn't. I was sitting with her, but I was not with her. I wasn't giving her my attention. And that's not okay. So give the gift of your attention and your presence to others and to yourself. You know, when you pay attention to yourself and you're being curious about yourself and you're taking your own side and you're acknowledging yourself, then life feels better. Then you're not waiting for someone else to do it and accepting bad behavior from people who are unable to do so. Here's a quote from me. Another quote from me. "It may be scary to try something new, but taking a risk is better than staying in a bad situation that doesn't feed your soul." Sometimes when people say, "Oh, I'm in this relationship, or I'm in this job, or I'm in this situation that's it's I know it's terrible, but I can't bring myself to leave it," what I say to them is this: when the pain of staying, because it's, you know, it's sort of what they know, right? So when the pain of staying is worse than the potential pain of leaving, you're going to leave. So if you're staying in a situation that you know is bad for you, whether it's a job or a marriage or a relationship or whatever, have some compassion for yourself. it's scary to leave. It's scary to take a risk. But when the pain of staying is worse than how it possibly could be if you leave, you're going to leave. And guess what? It's probably going to be a lot better. Yoga is really trying to liberate us from shame about our bodies. To love your body is a very important thing. I think the health of your mind depends on your being able to love your body. That is a quote from Rodney Lee. Oop, someone just called me and hung up. Caller, call me again if you can. I was not on the screen, so I didn't see that I was getting a call. So I'm looking now. If you call me again, I will take that call. Okay, so whether you're into yoga or not, loving your body is so important. So don't wait to lose weight or change your body to accept or like yourself. You can appreciate your body while you're in the process of becoming fitter, healthier, or stronger. And by the way, when you are waiting until you lose weight or become fitter or you look a certain way to be happy, guess what? You're never going to get there. When you get happy, it's a lot easier to lose weight, become fit, or reach whatever goal that you may have. As long as other people's opinions matter more than your own about yourself, you're owned by them. You're not even free. Another Oprah quote, some people will love you, some people will dislike you, some people will be indifferent. Ultimately, what matters is what you think of yourself. That way, no matter what others may think, your self-esteem will stay intact. When I first started, before I had my radio show, I had a YouTube channel, which is still up. It's called Break Free from Binge Eating with Dr. Nina. And I have various, what I thought were very helpful videos to try to get to, like, what's eating at you? Like, here's something that might be going on that you haven't thought about. And I have one video in particular. It's called How to Get Rid of Feelings. And, of course, the idea of the video is the only way to get rid of feelings is to actually feel them. That's the only way to get rid of feelings. You got to feel them and then you're free. You can't stuff them down, drop them, positive think them away, or do anything to push them aside. You can only feel them and then they're gone. But some people did not like this premise. They really wanted me to tell them how to get rid of feelings so that they could become, you know, free of all feelings and not feel any pain or anything ever in the world. And I got such horrific and continue, like, on a weekly basis, continue to get such horrible comments. And at first I was so shocked and sad. I was like, I'm just trying to be helpful, people. Why are you hating on me? And then I realized, you know, some people are just not going to like you. Some people are not going to be on board with what I have to say. People are not going to like me. People are not. See, I even did it. I just did the second person thing and I corrected myself. Some people are not going to like me. And look at how I did it. I did it because I was saying something that's uncomfortable. I was distancing myself because some people are not going to like you is distancing. When I say, oh, some people are just not going to like me, hurts a little bit more. So there, I am my own example of what I'm saying. It's we want to distance ourselves from something that is painful, but we have to just stay with what is real. So that's the reality. Not everybody is going to like us, and it is not our jobs to make other people like us if they don't. It is our jobs to find people who resonate with us, who like us, who get us, that we can relate to, that there's mutuality, and embrace those relationships and care about those people. And then, by the way, this is different from constructive criticism. I'm all for constructive criticism, but not from being called names and, I would say, overt macroaggressions towards me. And you guys know what that feels like. One more, and then I'm going to get to an email someone wrote me. How beautiful would it be if we could just see souls instead of bodies, to see love and compassion instead of curves? And this is a quote by a woman named Karen Kwan. Q-U-A-N. Beautiful. How amazing would it be if we could value our good hearts, our good deeds, and our good wishes for others as much as we value flat abs and toned muscles? Wouldn't that be an amazing thing indeed? So appreciate the true you instead of focusing only on the number on the scale. Okay, I got an email from someone. She said, here's why she likes the show. She said, I want to hear from someone who is not worried about eating half a bagel or berries. I think that might be Nicole, but I want to hear from someone who is not worried about eating half a bagel or berries, but who just inhaled 24 cookies and needs a way to face herself and come among others following such a horror and feeling unspeakably defiled. In no way am I minimizing others who struggle in different ways, etc., but I want to hear about a person who wakes up dreading getting out of bed because no level of a sincere commitment to eat right will bring that about. And then there's the added shame of having again failed. I need to hear from someone who, unlike those who are young, has lived more life than they have left and are still struggling with these lifelong issues. You know, and I just want to say to the writer of this email that's this audience. It is actually an anomaly that Nicole calls and is upset because she ate berries. Most people that I treat, most people in my online programs, in my practice, can relate to the eating 24 cookies and feeling the unspeakable shame and horror and hopelessness of that there could be any change. And I know what that's like because I know what it's like to, I remember vividly. This is why I do this work. I remember vividly that sense of, I'm going to be good. Oh my God, I just ate a box of gingerbread cookies and I don't even like gingerbread. And then all I could do was hate on myself. I know what that's feel like. I know what that feels like. I remember crying as Emily was crying in the bathroom eating the brownies, that crying and in pain and hating myself but being unable to stop. I know that pain. I remember that pain. And the fact that I am sitting here with you on the other side of that, never ever having the desire to do that again, and not because I'm white-knuckling it, just because it's not even a thought. That's how I know that my work and my way of creating liberation and transformation is possible. It comes started with me, and now it's with patients and clients all over the world. It is possible. So if that's you and you're listening to this and you're like, well, you know, I'm the one who's eating the 24 cookies and then going for some ice cream and then pizza and whatever, I don't know that anyone can relate to me. If that's what you're thinking out there, if you're listening to that, to this, and you're thinking that, I am here to tell you that there is hope. I'm here to tell you that when you get to the why, not just identifying it, but being able to process where it came from and develop a new strategy to be towards yourself, and that's really what it's all about, your relationship with yourself, that your relationship with food will change forever. And instead of waking up every day and saying, I'm going to be good, and this is what I'm going to have, and I'm not going to have that, and I'm going to do this exercise, and I'm, you know, instead of waking up every day thinking that, or did I gain weight from yesterday, or did I lose it? Instead of having those thoughts, you're just going to wake up and think about what are you going to do today? What's up? What's on the list? What are you doing? What do you want to do? What do you have to do? That's why I say you can think about your day, not your diet. So I really, really, really want to make that point that and I talk about it. Oh, let me see. I talk about it in my book, Food for Thought. My book, Food for Thought, which is my first book, I open, actually, where is it? I'm going to read it to you, because for those of you who are thinking, oh, you know, this is not for me, or I can't believe there's hope, this is an email that I got from a patient who was in treatment for binge eating. She was a new patient, and she wrote, "Just checking in. I want to write a list of what I ate at 4 p.m. A full-size candy bar, a gallon of ice cream, a small chocolate cake, yuck. A bowl of pasta, veggies with marinara and olive oil, chocolate chip cookies, 10 of them, 11 Hershey bars, the small ones, later," and she goes on and on and on. "Yes, I feel ill." So this is something that I don't want you to feel shame about. Something is eating at you. And by the way, yes, there's the person like Nicole who's upset because she ate some fruit for breakfast. And then there's the person that wrote in, and there's the person that I'm talking about from my book, and everything in between. If you have an unhappy relationship to food, an unhappy, unhealthy relationship to food, it matters. If it affects you, I don't care whether you call it an eating disorder or whatever. It doesn't matter. What matters is it's affecting you. And if it's affecting you, it needs your attention rather than your condemnation. It needs your attention, and you need to be able to be curious, not critical. What's going on with me? What's happening? In the case of the person that whose email I just read, and by the way, that was only a partial list. A lot of the things, we found that a lot of the things that she was eating were 135 calories, which is important because the number 135 had some particular resonance for her. Her mother weighed 135 pounds. And one day, this person came in and she said, "I feel as if I'm going to stop. I'm going to keep eating and eating and eating and eating. And I'm only going to stop after I've gained 135 pounds. So I remember thinking, she's always talking about 135 calorie cookies, and the number 135 kept coming up. And what we discovered ultimately was that she felt so separate from her mother. They had this terrible toxic relationship. Unconsciously, she was going to put the weight of her mother on her body. She would eat things that she didn't like, but her mother liked, by the way. She's like, "I don't know why I ate that whole jar of peanut butter. I don't even like peanut butter. My mother's the one who likes peanut butter." She unconsciously was going to gain 135 pounds so that she would sort of never be separated from her mother in her unconscious, if that makes sense. And she could, that extra weight of 135 pounds would stand for her mother, and she and her mother would be one forever. Which not everyone is, of course, doing that. That is some very psychoanalytical and deep work that was true of this particular person. Most people are not dealing with things like that. But I just share it with you to show how important it is that the hidden motivations that motivate our relationship with food. When we realized that this was a possibility, when I interpreted that, I thought that she was, she was only going to stop when she weighed 135, with the same as her mother, that then she would sort of symbolically have her mother with her. We began to talk about her relationship with her mother, and this is a grown woman in her 30s at the time, and that's when she started losing weight again. So just want to give you some food for thought, which happens to be the title of my first book, Food for Thought, Perspectives on Eating Disorders. If you want to read about that or ask me questions, I'd be happy to talk more about it on the air. The point is that if you are turning to food, you are turning away from something else. If you are turning to food, you are coping in some way. You are turning emotional pain to physical pain. You are numbing yourself. You are distracting yourself. You are you know, punishing yourself. Even you're rewarding yourself. There's something going on that you need to identify. And once you do that, then you know what to talk about and what to deal with. Let me see. I'm just checking. Just looking at my page. Let's see. To see if there are any more questions. So if you have any questions, as always, you can write them. Go to my Facebook page, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. You can also join my group, Dr. Nina's Food for Thought Community, and you can ask me questions there. Okay, so my only comment was from Tony. So let me go over a couple more of these 100 ways to make peace with food. Oh, here's one of my favorites. Number 26. Kids aren't born hating their bodies. Let's start teaching them to love themselves. Kids aren't born hating their bodies, and either were you. It's time to learn a new way of thinking about your body, which is an attitude of gratitude and appreciation rather than hatred. By the way, recently someone said, I just can't love my body. I try to love my body, but I don't love my body. I'm not happy with my body. I'm not happy with the size. I'm huffing and puffing and I'm going up a few stairs. I don't love my body. I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. And I said, okay, you don't have to love your body. You don't have to love your body, but you can want to nurture your body. You can appreciate the things that you do like about your body while at the same time working to change the things that you don't like if they are changeable. So that's why I like to think about self-acceptance rather than self-love. Because often, and I hear this all the time, people are like, I'm trying that self-love thing and I'm a miserable failure. I can't love myself. So then they feel bad about not being able to love themselves, which makes them hate themselves even more, which makes them feel bad, which makes them turn to food. So instead of putting pressure on yourself to love your body or love yourself, how about accepting yourself? How about saying, you know what? There are parts of me that I love and there are parts of me I don't love. There are parts of me I'm trying to change, but I'm going to hold in my mind the aspects of me that I appreciate as well as the aspects that I'm trying to change. And that doesn't mean, oh, I'm a good person and I have, you know, a good heart and I'm a nice friend. I don't mean that. I mean, that not only, you can also like aspects of your physicality. You could say, I don't like my thighs, but I love my hair. Or, you know, I don't like my stomach, but my eyes are beautiful or something. So hold both. Don't put pressure on yourself to love yourself. Just allow yourself to appreciate what you do like and value about yourself, your whole self, and hold the things that you're trying to change and be acknowledging of yourself for the fact that you're working to change. Because when you have an attitude of acceptance, rather that's a lot easier than just loving yourself. It's hard to just love yourself because there's always but I don't love that. Doesn't mean unconditional love is one thing, but unconditional love means that you love yourself despite the fact that there are things about yourself you don't love. That's why I like self-acceptance better than self-love. Promise yourself today to stop letting the size of your genes or the number on the scale dictate your self-worth. There is so much more to you than a number on the scale. Appreciate the way your mind works. Appreciate your sense of humor. Appreciate your creativity. Appreciate your intelligence. Appreciate your spirituality if you're so inclined. Stop reducing yourself to a mere number. You are so much more than a number. And that does it for today. So thank you so much for being here with me today on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. You can listen live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, or you can listen later on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get podcasts. Just look for The Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. And as a holiday gift to all of you, I released more copies of my new book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. Here it is. So yes, there are, I did allow more copies to be released for the free giveaway, but they are still limited. So if you haven't gotten yours, grab yours now. You can still get it. There are limited copies, so get yours now at drnina.info. That's drnina.info. drnina.info. Happy holidays to everybody, whatever you are celebrating. Have a happy, healthy holiday, and I will see you in 2 weeks. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin. You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin. Only on LA Talk Radio.